Willie is one of the great stories, man, and great characters and great discussions. There's a really good Adam Carolla documentary. That's how we met Willie, called Uppity. He's raced all over the world. He's raced in every imaginable. I started really looking at all the different organizations. Hell, half of them I had to remind myself what they were, because he's raced from trucks to F1, from stock cars to, I mean, everything you can imagine, he has driven.
Born January 3rd in San Jose, California, the son of an amateur race car driver, he developed a love of racing at a young age, moving to Europe after high school and winning the Dunlop Championship in his first year of competition. He continued his groundbreaking career, competing in the Formula Ford and Formula Atlantic Series, NASCAR and Indy Racing. He was the first African-American man to test a Formula One car and to compete in the Indianapolis 500, as well as being one of the most successful drivers of all time in the Trans Am Series, and his story was told in the documentary, Uppity. Please welcome racing legend, Willie T. Ribbs.
Hey, Willie, how have you been?
Hey, I got a pulse.
Right, every day above ground, my friend, every day.
Yes, sir.
You are. So, by the way, thanks for coming on the show, man. It's just, you know, I'm a race fan of every kind. I just like racing. I like cars. I like motorcycles. Anything with a motor. And
hey, when you call, your wish is my command.
Get out of here. Listen, you. How have you been? You've been healthy. Your family's good.
Yeah, everyone's good. I'm out in the country here in Texas, so. We nothing but deers and squirrels, and they don't have a mask on.
Right. Are you getting out? Because what I've been doing is social distancing at 75 miles an hour on the bike, and it seems to be working pretty well for my mental health.
Well, I've been out. You know, Theo, my son's one of the top shooters in the world.
And, is that right?
So I've been out practicing with Theo on the ranch and just been shooting, getting ready for his next event.
What does he shoot?
Shotguns.
Excellent.
Sporting clay and you know, we opened up the season. Theo opened up with a win in Florida and a win in Georgia in February, and bang, everything shut off. So yeah, his next big event will be in July. So he's been practicing, and I've been working with him
nice.
On connection and focus and everything else.
I love shooting. I don't hunt. I just don't. It's just not enjoyable to me. But I do love shooting. It's how my dad and I kind of reconnected as a teenager. He taught me to shoot. And so we could go out there and you wouldn't argue about anything. You would just tell you how to shoot better. And it was a great way to bond with my dad. That gave me a lifetime.
Bobby Bell is a legend in Kansas City.
Sure.
And Theo takes Bobby Bell shooting. In fact, they shot in the Super Bowl event together in Dallas a few years ago.
Wow. I've never been able to master at all any of the clays. I'm good with a pistol. I'm okay with a rifle, but for whatever reason, and I love shotguns, but I'm so hit or miss, pardon the pun, with that stuff. Like for a little bit, I'll be in the pocket and I'll really be able to get in front of it, and then I'll just go to hell.
Yeah, you know, just time. It's like golfing.
Yeah.
It's like golfing. I mean, you've got several different types of shots, and, you know, you got putting, you got driving, you got mid-range and all that. And that's the same with shooting. We don't, as a matter of fact, even when we're shooting rifle and pistols, we don't shoot anything standing because it's too easy. We got to shoot. It's got to be moving. We've got to have some difficulty.
You see, those are the guys I want to learn from, but I don't want to shoot around because then I'm the slow kid. And I'm like, you know. Well, hey, like, let's talk about racing for a minute. When you were a kid, so I remind everybody, if you haven't seen Uppity, which is a great documentary, you started racing when you were a kid and got in some trouble up in the hills in California, and your parents went, you know, if you're going to be like that, you're going to go to racing school.
Well, I mean, I started driving at an early age. My family, you know, had a very successful business, and my older brother had a Lotus Cortina, so I was 12 years old, and I took it out joyriding, and so when sheriff caught me, and in fact, he couldn't catch me until I slowed down. He walked up to the car and he couldn't see because I was so small. He couldn't see me down into the cockpit. So he said, I'm not going to ask you for your license because I know you don't have one. He said, what's your name? I said, well, my name is Willie T. Ribs. He says, I know, we know your family. So they didn't take, he didn't take me to jail. They called my mom to pick me up. She came, drove up Mount Hamilton Road, picked me up. And then they sent me to my grandpa's ranch after that. So I grew up on a 300-acre ranch in Northern California. And that's where I really learned my driving because he had lots of vehicles. And that's where it really started. I knew early on because my dad races a hobby. I knew early on what my career was going to be. So, I just, anything I could drive. I drove everything, harvesters, combines, dump trucks,
yeah,
which was all on my grandpa's. I drove everything.
It's always fun, isn't it? There's a weird love of that. Like, and I feel the same way. Like, I'm not tied to a Harley per se. I bought one of the electric ones, which are really fun to drive and ride. But I also get a great kick out of it. It doesn't matter if it's a side-by-side or a skid steer, or a dump truck. I talked to guys at the landfill out here one time and let me drive the stompers that smashed the trash down because I just kept seeing them, and I thought, man, I wonder what that's like. So it's a weird draw, isn't it? But I like, you just end up really liking to drive anything.
Anything. And if you look at the great drivers, especially of the past, they don't do it much anymore because each genre is so specialized. But in the old days, Bobby Unser could drive anything and win in anything. Mario Andretti, same way. A.J. Foyt, same way.
Right.
They were, and Uncle Bobby would always tell me, he says, drive everything. Drive everything. He says, you know, he even used to say, chase every kind of woman, don't matter what color they are.
You know what? It's hard to poke a hole in that kind of logic. You know? You can't eat the same food every day.
Exactly.
you got into racing, and we went over to England. You did some racing, and I mean, you're talking F1 and some really great open cockpit, really serious formula racing. And how was that? Did those guys in Europe, were they pretty accepting?
They were. Oh, Europe was great. I mean, I was still today when I go over there. I was the treatment I received in Europe and in England because I lived in England. I went to England when I was 21 years old, because I wanted to be a Formula One driver. And I knew, you know, a lot of drivers from all over the world went to Europe out of South America. You look at Senna, for example, Ayrton Senna or Emerson Fittipaldi. That was the playbook. Well, I went over there, and I won my first championship there in my first year. And, you know, and I was racing against Nigel Mansell. Well, Nigel Mansell, it was world champion and in Formula One. And so, you know, it was a great start to my career, and I would do it all over again.
Yeah. And it's you know what, my mom's from Norwich and my dad was over there in the military. That's how he met her. And then I ended up living there for 3 years when I was a kid, over on the near the coast. And I have great memories of that. But they love, I remember, what was my race car? It was a Formula One black race car with gold filigree on it, and it was a who was it? Something Special Racing. It's a legendary British racer. But they loved it. I remember that being one of the first race cars I ever had. And being a kid, I thought all race cars looked like that at that point. I thought they were all Formula One. I thought they all had open cockpits. And then, of course, you start to see things on TV later on. And now you're back here in the States, it's a different deal because it started as bootlegging. And in the South, you know, when you started to get into racing in the States, it wasn't as accepting.
Oh, no. When I came back to the United States, it was another planet.
Yeah.
When I was over there, I was a race driver. And there, I had no title other than a winning race driver. When I came back here, I was a black driver. I was tagged immediately. And then really what, it didn't mean anything whether I could win races or not. It was the color was out in front of everything. And, but, you know, I, And it was a surprise. I did not expect the reception I got when I came back.
And so you think back to the story. I was talking to another friend in NASCAR yesterday that Wendell Scott, that story, that the Richard Pryor movie was loosely based on it. He wins a race. They just simply won't announce him. They give it to second place. And then they say, then they discovered he was two laps ahead when Petty's car failed. And it took him 2 years to even say he won the race, and took him 20 years and he'd already died, or 10 more years. I guess he'd already died 20 years later before his family received the trophy.
I don't think his family has received the trophy yet.
That is
from what I understand, they're still trying to get the trophy. And Wendell won the race. It was a dirt race down in Jacksonville. It was one of the NASCAR sanctioned races, and he won the race. It was a Saturday night or Sunday night feature, and they didn't want him on the victory podium with the white trophy girl.
Wow!
So they didn't want him up there, and so it wasn't until a day or two later they declared him victory. Well, hell, he's back at home by then.
Sure.
So it took away that moment, and it was still. I don't know how he dealt with what he dealt with.
Now you see with Bubba Wallace and what's happened. Obviously, you know, we're all following the news, and we've had Bubba on the show, and he seems like a great guy. Seems like, you know, he's going to have to get better at racing, and that's, you know, the thing. As you know, you can't beat stupid out of someone's heart. You just can't. I wish you could. You can't do it. But what you can do is beat them on the track if you're a racer, and just prove them wrong every time. And that was the thing I think that drove you as well. It just that's how you have to do it.
Well, I enjoyed the opposition. I was doing a show on CNN last night with Don Lemon, and he asked me, "Well, what do you think about the news?" I said, "What?" I said, "The news? I mean, that news was a piece of cake in my day." I said, "I was getting death threats." And the look on Don Lemon's face was priceless. "Well, that stuff doesn't bother me." I said, "As a matter of fact, I like fighting." So, you know.
That's right.
So, any opportunity to get in a fist fight, you know, I was on. So I didn't get, you know, once they saw that, nah, this guy, he don't. You know, like my grandpa used to tell me, when a rattlesnake bites you, you bite him back. And after a while, they said, "Well, we better leave him alone because we're all going to be missing some teeth."
That's right. That's right. Yeah, most of those people are cowards. And you can tell because they very rarely ever come through the front door. There's a code, a phrase, something. But they, you know, I've gotten the same thing all my life with my friends who've dealt with that. And they're like, you know, it's a lot easier if someone walks up and tells me they don't like me, period, than coming in the back door like a coward, you know. If you're going to do it, hell, man, I think most guys would rather have you say it right to their face so I know what I'm dealing with.
Well, I had a lot of friends down there, despite, you know, the time it was.
Sure.
A lot of friends and a lot of support. But, you know, there's that element.
Of course.
There's that element. And me and my cousin Donnie, used to play for the Cincinnati Bengals. And Donnie's 6'5", 275. He says, "We're in Charlotte, North Carolina." He says, "Well, let's go out. There's a country bar right down the road." We went in there, and he had a cowboy hat on, and so did I. And when you walk into this bar, it had Confederate flags everywhere and old NASCAR pictures. And we walked in the bar, and the music stopped playing. Right?
It's great.
We walked in there, and they knew, half the people in there knew us. And Donnie walks up to the bar, and there was a blonde in Daisy Duke. She was the waitress. He says, "Turn around." She says, "Okay. I don't know about your future, but Man, glasses were falling on the floor. And the next day, the promoter of the Speedway calls me and says, Willie T, you and your cousin going to get the Civil War going down here again. But that was Willie T. Ribbs.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you know, get used to it.
That's it. You know what? Sometimes
that was my method. Get used to it.
We stick around sometimes, and I do this. I find I go, man, I'm going to stay longer. Why? Because I want to irritate you. Because I can tell my existence here bothers some people. So that'll reduce the batteries every time for me.
Yep. Yeah. No. I like people, but I don't like racists.
No. Of course,
I don't like. Man. I don't like thieves. That's just. I don't, there's just certain, you know, my grandpa was born in 1899. The Titanic sunk in 1912. So, you know, I was raised old school to respect people. And but give back to them what they give to you.
That's right. That's right. That's it. And there's nothing worse in this world than a coward. I mean, I remember my old man telling me, liars, thieves, and cowards. If you were any of those in his eyes, like, dude, it was over.
Yep.
And if you just joined the show, the great racer, Willie T. Ribbs, you should find the documentary uppity. I know we got to go, but you tell me this. Will you reach out to Bubba Wallace, or is that just unnecessary, do you think?
You know, he's got a lot on his plate. Now, he knows the Willie T. Ribbs story. He knows, I'm sure he's seen the movie documentary Uppity on Netflix. So, you know, he's seen it. And he knows if he needs me, I'll be there for him. I'm there for Lewis Hamilton. So in Formula One.
Yep.
So they all know they can call Uncle Will.
You know, and I think, like you said, you know, when you were racing the day, there was the element, and then you had your friends. And I think a lot of those racers yesterday, I thought it felt very sincere to me. Watching them surround his car and reach out to him. And I was like, man, what a statement. These guys are fighting for their careers. They're going to war every week. They got a place. They got to win. They got to hold their sponsors. I mean, and these guys can fist fight each other on the track. But in the end, it felt as if, you know, family can fight, but God help the bastard that comes in after my brother.
Yeah, and I'm glad that the drivers stood up and supported him. And it just goes to show that, you know, we're moving forward in this country. We got to move forward. We, mankind, you better get along, because if we keep it the rate we're going, we'll all be gone.
That's right.
By 2050, I give mankind another 50 years max on this planet.
Yeah.
And no. Then we're done.
Man, I sure do hope.
Dinosaurs will be singing.
Yeah, like this plant kicked us off before. It'll do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope you get to Kansas City and we get to go shoot or eat or talk or just whatever, man. I have about 1,000 questions, man. I'll just wear your ass out with them.
Are you ready? I can't wait. I'm going to be up there. When I come up, I'll be up there to see Bobby Bell, and we'll all go to dinner.
Please, please. I can't tell you how much I would love that.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right, Willie. Thank you, man. The great Willie T. Rice.